Life Audio.
Welcome to Truth Tribe with Doug Grotheis, where we seek the truth about the things that matter most through reason and evidence. Last time I gave a talk on the pedagogy of jazz, or how jazz values and jazz virtues can inform teaching, as they have for me for many years. And today I'd like to read an essay called The Virtues of Jazz. Now, when we start out Truth Tribe, I say, as I just said, we seek the truth about the things that matter most. We might think that jazz doesn't matter that much. But in fact, I think in many ways, jazz is a gift of God's common grace. And there are certain virtues in the best of jazz that can be modest for us, or we can learn from the skills of great jazz players and apply those skills outside of jazz.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-497-4410. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-497-4410. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-497-4410.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
The virtues of jazz. Any jazz aficionado knows the musical virtues of jazz, whether they are a musician, a jazz writer, or simply a committed jazz listener, such as myself. In classical Western thought, that is, in the musings of cats like Aristotle and Plato, a virtue is a kind of excellence in performance that flows from a settled habit. One who plays the flute, for example, as it ought to be played, using the proper tone, pitch, and tone, displays a virtue or sharp skill in that musical instrument. One may be virtuous with respect to any endeavor worth doing, since anything worth doing is worth doing well. One who masters a worthwhile skill is a virtuoso. On the other hand, those who attempt to play the flute or lead a nation and fail to master the requisite skills for these endeavors, display vice. This term has come to be associated with things like the vice squad, but historically it applies to any task done so poorly as to merit criticism. For example, a drummer who often plays off the beat or in the wrong time signature fails to perform properly to keep the beat. As such, the playing is musically vicious, although not morally so. Jazz, of course, exhibits musical virtues, which is why we love it. The music has a rich, deep, and fascinating tonal history, from ragtime to swing to bebop to freebop and beyond. It has given us some of the greatest tunes of the 20th century, such as Take the A-Train and Round Midnight and A Love Supreme. Jazz has manifested geniuses such as Louis Armstrong, Duke Ellington, Miles Davis, and John Coltrane. And of course, if it swings in one way or another, we love it. For these things, and for so many others, I'm grateful. Yet there's another set of jazz virtues. These virtues are smugly related to the musical virtues, but are not identical to them. Although a necessary part of jazz, these virtues speak to us about matters off the bandstand and outside of the recording room. They give us practical advice and inspiration for the challenges of life. We might call them virtues of the wise life. Let us jam on just four of them: tradition, collaboration, improvisation, and transcendence. First, tradition. Jazz has a thickly textured and fascinating history of development that has given us a tradition. Worth noting, in Ken Burns' delightful documentary Jazz from 2000, author Gerald Early claimed that three things are unique and extraordinary about America: the Constitution, baseball, and jazz. In fact, one cannot understand American history or American character without recognizing the seminal role that jazz has played. This is true in two ways. First, while the cultural origins of jazz may be traced to red light districts in New Orleans, its spirit has never been imprisoned there, since jazz performance calls for talent, effort, and courage. This was particularly true for the African-American jazz artists. There were two white jazz folks early on as well, who only unsegregated from whites while they were on stage or in the recording room. They were only allowed to do so in those sets. If by talent, toughness, and class, a man like Duke Ellington could bring honor and respect to his race as a jazz composer, band leader, and piano player, and never underestimate his piano playing. So the tradition of jazz is one of struggle and ascent, but not only the music itself, first called by some the devil's music, but also for those descended from slaves. In 1971, Duke Ellington received the President's Medal of Freedom, which was a million miles up from playing only with blacks and only four whites at the cotton crop in the 1920s. Second, the tradition of jazz respects the elders and the standards. No one joins the jazz stream without studying their musical forefathers and foremothers. Here are just a few examples. If you play trumpet, you must understand Louis Armstrong and Miles Davis. If saxophone, then Coleman Hawkins, Johnny Hodges, and John Coltrane. If drums, then Joe Jones, Kenny Clarke, and Buddy Rich. If piano, then Duke Ellington, Bud Powell, and Keith Jarrett. If bass, then Jimmy Blanton, Paul Chambers, and Charles Mingus. This homage to tradition, and of course I've left out many great players, trades on humility. One has so much to learn from others. Miles Davis, not particularly known for humility, once said, "At least one day out of the year, all musicians should just put their instruments down and give thanks to Duke Ellington." In its respect to, but not enslavement by, tradition, jazz calls us to remember the past, to salute our elders, and to not get too big for our own britches. We stand and swing on shoulders of giants. Moreover, newer may not be truer. Often the truth stands fixed in the past from where we can observe it and be inspired by it. Hip chops are not limited to today. Two, collaboration. Jazz also demands and respects collaboration. While jazz musicians usually take solos, although Freddie Green never did in 47 years of playing with Count Basie, they cannot exist as islands unto themselves. Even when Sonny Rollins or Peter Brosnan record in solo saxophone session, they draw on their experience in bands, that is, in combos, and from their knowledge of how other musicians play their instruments. But jazz collaboration is more than the teamwork found among workers on a business project. In performance, it is a high wire act with no neck in sight. Yes, the players are rehearsed before the gigs most of the time. A true jazz is never performed in a rote or perfunctory manner. When played live, no tune sounds the same twice. This means that the musical collaboration is spontaneous, knowledgeable, and courageous. The collaboration involves collective improvisation. One player does not solo over the top of the mere backing band, as with Kenny G. Rather, the whole group improvises and plays off each other, usually with great affection and appreciation for each other. You need big ears to collaborate in jazz. You must listen hard before and while you play. For example, the drummer hears and follows the sax. Unparalleled in this regard with John Coltrane and Elvin Jones in Train's classic quartet about 1960 to 1965. It gives you goosebumps if you are really listening. The spirit of collaboration is often palpable as would Duke Ellington, would cheer on his players from the piano bench. I recently saw a local jazz being performed at Dazzle Lounge. The piano player and the piano playing leader sometimes stop playing in order to stand and demonstrably root for the solo. The jazz spirit of creative collaboration teaches us to give our best and bring out the best in others, whatever setting we find ourselves. To collaborate wisely, we need to discern our own strengths and weaknesses in relation to the potential of our friends, family, and coworkers. As a philosophy teacher, I endeavor to collaborate with students as I solicit questions, field questions, and jam on new ideas given to me live in the classroom. I also learn from students' papers. We are in the same band and make comments on them. Better yet, we meet at a local watering hole and talk it over. And all for the better if jazz is playing in the background. This is all done in the spirit of jazz. Join me in whatever field in which you work. Three, improvisation. I touched on it above, but more needs to be said about the virtue of jazz improvisation, without which there is no jazz. In The Imperfect Art, Ted Gioia rightly claims that jazz improvisation is akin to someone composing on the spot. A musician cannot go back and erase the notes and try again, as can a composer in his room. What is said is done. Mistakes can and will be made, but jazz people being worth the list, since the successors are so satisfied. The distinguished jazz critic Whitney Ballet wrote that jazz is the sound of surprise. He was right. Despite what some think, jazz improvisation is not creating in a void or simply meaning. Rather, the improvisation of a soloist must harmonize with the styles of the players in your band and must resonate with the whole tradition of jazz. Moreover, solo improvisation needs to fit in with the contours of a particular piece that is being played. A ballad requires a certain kind of solo. A tune with a fast walking bass line calls for another kind of solo. To illustrate, consider John Coltrane's playing on the studio version of Naima, a moving ballad written for his first wife, and his playing on the many versions of Impressions, an up-tempo piece that allows him to stretch out into the stratosphere, but without leaving his bandmates earthbound. Through discipline and daring improvisation, jazz musicians also learn how to develop their own voice, their own distinctive way to make music on the spot. The musician does not find his voice by copying his mentors. That is pure imitation, not improvisation. Jazz guitarist extraordinaire Pavathini has said he was greatly inspired by Wes Montgomery and can play like him. But that is not the point of jazz. Improvisation, whatever. Jazz improvisation gives us a model for skillful and sympathetic work with others across the spectrum of life's endeavors. Please indulge me in another reference to Kuchin. The older I get, the more I find my voice as a teacher. I know the tradition fairly well, have taught it for many years, and thus feel free to improvise on ideas with my students. That does not mean that anything goes. Rather, I am free to ask questions and make remarks, and sometimes role play, within a field of discourse or tradition. By improvising, we risk losing the rhythm of a class or leaving it behind. In some cases, a student may leave me behind. One reason or another. However, this improvisation allows for peak teaching and learning experiences, and I cannot leave it behind. I wager that in every field, the virtues of jazz improvisation can inspire more meaning and enjoyment. A lawyer approaches a case within the tradition of law, but uses his own voice in interacting with his client and planning a strategy. One must go by the book, tradition, but one can also write a few new chapters in the spirit of the book. One could go on, but I hope I have made the point. Four, transcendence. The last virtue of jazz, transcendence, may seem oddly placed in this essay, and its relationship to jazz differs from that of tradition, collaboration, and improvisation. Transcendence is a term that means to rise above something. Thus, the intellect of a human we hope, transcends that of a dog, although the dog can communicate with and appreciate the intellect of humans. But there is something beyond them. Similarly, a jazz aficionado's understanding of John Coltrane's playing in A Love Supreme transcends that of a jazz neophyte, the things that jazz just sounds weird. But how can transcendence be a virtue as a part of jazz? Most high-level musicians, whatever their worldview might be, attest to experience something high and exalted in their playing jazz, or at least sometimes. For example, avant-garde saxophonist titan Peter Brotzman reported in an interview that, quote, music comes from somewhere else. The context for this remark was that music rises above the difficulties and grubbiness of common life under the sun. At its best moments, jazz and other kinds of music seems to signal something sacred, something beyond the reach of a purely psychological or material explanation. Magic happens when the muse is afoot and the band is swinging. His virtue, however, is of a different order than that of tradition, collaboration, and improvisation, since its presence is more of a visitation than the sum of jazz's excellences. Drummer Alvin Jones commented that he sensed an almost telepathic communication between the members of Coltrane's classic quartet. This dimension of jazz at its apogee may be worth music on music room. It may even be a key that fits a lock and opens a door to something wonderful and real beyond our dreams. These four virtues of jazz, tradition, collaboration, improvisation, and transcendence, are gifts for the entire jazz world. But they're also gifts for the larger world outside of jazz, where human beings search for meaning and truth in their vocations and in all their endeavors. The old philosophers and sages told us to pursue virtue and to eschew vice. Jazz, at its best, gives us some strong clues on how to do this. If we have ears, then we ought to hear it. This has been Doug Grotheis with Youth Tribe. If you appreciate these messages, you may want to get them on my website, douglasgrotheis.com, or tell a friend about the program.
Truth Tribe is a production of Life Audio and Salem Media. If you liked what you heard today, please take a second to rate and review this podcast in your favorite podcast app so that more listeners like you can find the show. For more faith-filled, inspirational podcasts, visit us at lifeaudio.com.
Hello, I'm Adam Comer.
And I'm Ryan Chittister.
And we are the host of Life After Addiction podcast. What we believe is that addiction is not a surprise to God.
That's right. We discuss addiction from a biblical worldview and how true freedom comes through a personal relationship with Jesus Christ.
Absolute freedom from addiction, the secular worldview of once an addict, always an addict, is just not true. If you or someone you love struggles with addiction, subscribe to Life After Addiction at lifeaudio.com.